Okay, merci beaucoup. The Honourable Minister, I think from his speech, as you have seen, he's given us 12 points. And it's interesting to note that those 12 points are very, very important when we're looking at rice trends and how to actually increase production, productivity. It deals with all those issues, and then in the end, how we would try to achieve or attain rice self-sufficiency. And we shouldn't also forget about the fact that rice self-sufficiency is a component of food sufficiency, and it's important that we try to link all of these for it to make sense. He started by giving up some figures, and I'm going to continue with that so that we can actually present some information to our panel members, and we'll get the audience to reflect on some of these issues that are coming up with regards to the trends of rice in sub-Saharan Africa. So I'm going to give a little introduction just to actually present the whole rice trend situation in sub-Saharan Africa. And then I'll talk about production area and yield trends. And then obviously what we eat. I remember once I visited South Korea, and we were talking about production. And we were talking about paddy, and then the Koreans said, we don't eat paddy, we eat milled rice. And so it's important to talk about milled rice. So we'll talk about milled rice production and consumption. And then the issue of self-sufficiency is dear to our hearts in Africa. I know that some people think that it is a political quagmire, but I believe working at Africa Rice and having the experience, not as much as the minister, but at least some of it, we can actually achieve rice self-sufficiency, provided we respond to some of the questions that he has asked. And then I'm going to again present my own way of looking forward and a little conclusion. We all remember, I start with the global food crisis in 2007, 2008. It's very important because I think we're all sleeping, and all of a sudden we had a wake up call with the global food crisis. And we saw what happening, soaring food prices going up. It even went to the point where countries were rioting. So this actually jolted the conscience of quite a few people, governments, the private sector, and all categories of stakeholders, all those are interested in food security, and especially rice self-sufficiency. This whole thing that happened in 2007, 2008 increased the awareness for the production of more and better food. So it was not only about the quantity, but it was also about the quality of the food. Now, with regards to rice, which is a staple food for about half of the world's population and provides 20% of the calories, it is very important. So we are positioned to come in, and that's why we're talking, and that's why we're making all this effort to organize such conferences, to get people involved, to ask the necessary questions, put down on the table the equations, and try to find the solutions. We know that rice is also an important dietary energy source, and we're even taking it far. Formally, we're talking about rice as a food security crop, but we also know that it could be a revenue generation crop. We've seen what's happening in East Africa especially, where we would not rather say that it's food security, but it's more about revenue, generating revenue. And this presentation is just going to show some trends over the last decade. And we're going to just focus on 2010, 2018. And we are going to talk about the progress made in achieving rice self-sufficiency and a little bit of what research has contributed to that. I mean, we can't talk about this without talking about research, the importance of research has been underlined in discussions. But we should actually try to understand the rice market at a glance. And we should know that the world market is very, very volatile. Some figures here are showing that rice exports in the world total $20.7 billion in 2017, down by an average of 19% from 2013 when it was $25.7 billion. So it's a big market, but we see that rice exports are diminishing. It's a positive sign, and we can try to actually decipher this, what's responsible for all of this. And obviously there are other issues. India is top exporter, as you can see. 30% of the export responded for 31% of the export in 2017 and 18. And there are other factors affecting the market. Droughts, 2014, 2015. In India, droughts put a crunch on the Indian rice market. So it's very important. And climatic conditions, the minister mentioned it, in particular affecting the rice production in major producing regions of India. And obviously, as it happens, it will also affect the world market. And I just want to mention two things that the minister said. It's about water and land resources. We're talking about climate, but there are other issues which we should try to take on board as of now. Water and land resources, there is a whole competition for that in that part of the world, and don't think that we won't get to that here. We'll definitely get to that, and we're seeing it from his experience he has also mentioned. And China, first world producer of rice, imported rice up to a tune of 1.5 billion in 2015. So these are issues that we should be looking at. It's not all good. China is the first world producer, but they're importing rice. So it means that there is a lot of questions that we should be asking and solutions that we will need to respond to these questions. Let's look at rice imports in particular. This has continued to increase in sub-Saharan Africa by 45%, so from 7.3 million tons to 16 million tons. That's pretty big in terms of import. And when we look at from the economic side of it, the estimated import bill for 2018 is roughly about 6.4 million. Now, I've been hearing a lot of presentations, the figures differ. Now, we have, this is the most recent figure that we're having, and for 2018 estimated, and it's saying that we are at 6.4 billion. Three, 4 years ago, we were at about 5.5. So import bills have gone up. The rice area has increased by 40% from 8.5 million hectares to 11.9 million hectares. And within this, we can see certain trends. For example, in 2012, the rate of increase was at 24%. 2012 to 2016, the rate decreased to 16%, and it has remained, it has remained stagnant just here. You can see just there. At the top there, it has remained stagnant. So it has increased and it's stagnating there. In terms of the rice area per region, when we look at West Africa, the growth rate of the rice area is 52%. So it has increased from 5.3 million hectares to 8 million hectares. And you know, when we're saying the rice area is increasing, we should be, thank you, a pointer. We should also be looking at the competition that would exist. This was what the minister was trying to bring on the table. Obviously, if we're increasing area, there will be internal competitions, and we should be very wary of this. West Africa growth rate is higher than Central, Southern, and Southern Africa, and higher than Eastern Africa. So, rice, if you're looking at the trends in rice, okay, so West Africa, we have always said that West Africa is a region that is much more interested in rice. They consume more rice than any other region. And we can see that it's reacting in this way. We can see that the rice area is growing. The yields, Yields increased from 7% by 7% from 2.05 tons per hectare to 2.2 tons per hectare in general. But we could also look at it, if we look at this, it's a two-phase yield trend.
It's kind of down. It's working, but.
It's a two-phase yield trend, and we can see that there was a marked increase in yield by 15% from 2.05 tons per hectare to 2.3 tons per hectare in 2008-2012. So this was in response to the food crisis. So there was an issue and there was a reaction. A lot of investments from donors, governments were interested in investing in order to respond to this food crisis. But then there is a second phase, and you can see a yield decrease. And then we started, should I say, slipping again, decreased by 7% from 2.37 tons per hectare to 2.2 tons per hectare. So increased reaction to the food crisis, and then it started decreasing again. And what we normally say is that this decrease in yield, it's not that we don't have the varieties there. Research has been actually generating varieties that are responding to some of the issues. But we're purporting that this is attributed to policy measures, government support that did not sustain yield growth. So it's saying what this is telling us, and we'll see that later, is that we should increase maybe our investments and have very good policies. Per region, it's we can see that East Africa has the highest yield, increased yield, 2.63 to 2.81 tons per hectare. The lowest is in Central and Southern Africa. In terms of yield in general, but in terms of the rate of increase, West Africa has the highest yield rate increase of 9.5% from 2.42 to 2.65 tons per hectare, followed by Central Southern Africa, 9.1%, and East Africa, 6.8%. A little comparison with what is happening in the world. So comparing Sub-Saharan Africa and the world, between 2012 and 2018, we see an increase in global yield globally by 2%, but a decrease in Sub-Saharan Africa by 7%. Global yield increasing, but Southern Africa increasing. In 2008, difference in global yield and global and sub-Saharan African yield was 2.18. This is the gap between these two yields. And in 2018, we have seen that the gap increased from 2.1 to 2.2. So there is a concern here. And it's obvious that yield difference exists. There is a high yield difference between the world and sub-Saharan Africa, and we should do something about it. These are the questions that we're asking why, and we should be learning some lessons here. Paddy production increased by 55%. This is quite interesting. Paddy production is increasing from 17.03 million metric tons in 2008 to 26.31 metric tons in 2018. And we're saying that this, when we look at the figures, this is mainly due to rice area expansion. If you look at it generally, we're saying yield is dropping. So we couldn't attribute this to yield, but an increase in production. But between 2009 and 2012, if we look at the slope, it's steeper there, 2009 and 2012. There was an increase in production. And when we look back, this corresponds to an increase in rice yield observed between 2008 and 2012. So yield, again, if you look at it, paddy production, was increasing, and it increased a slight steep slope there, because there was an additional support that increased yield research generating in response to the food crisis. If you look at it, this was the period of the food crisis. So things are happening, and we're having very interesting results. Again, we have paddy production per region. West Africa, fastest growth at 73%. Central and Southern Africa at 47%, and Eastern Africa at 32%. And similar trends were observed in rice area expansion. This is compared to the world, paddy production in the world. You can see that production in sub-Saharan Africa, production increased by 55% from 17.03 million metric tons to 26. In the world, the production increased by 8% only from 602 metric tons to 650.9 metric tons. Obviously, Asia accounts for 89% of total paddy rice production in the world. So Asia is still leading paddy production in the world. Milled rice, what we actually consume. Consumption increased faster than production. I think this is already said. And consumption increased by 81%. And this has several implications, notably the fact that population is increasing. Production only increased by 55%, which obviously leaves a gap, as you can see. And this is what we're fighting to. We're trying to actually bridge this gap. This brings us to the issue of rice self-sufficiency. So if consumption is increasing faster than production, obviously we'll never have enough rice, local rice for the population. And we can see, and it's even worse, we can see that rice self-sufficiency decreased from 61% to 52% in sub-Saharan African countries between 2008 and 2018. Now this is very, I think this is a cause for concern to us working, and when we see this kind of figures where rice self-sufficiency is decreasing, we are saying that we have to actually put more effort. And here, we give you some more detailed results and some more results on certain countries. We can see that we've grouped the countries. It's obvious that no country has achieved the self-sufficiency objective. That's quite clear. Between 2018 and now. No, three countries are closer to it. You can see up there, Tanzania, Madagascar, and Mali. Very close, and it's interesting because they've been very close for quite a long time. So there's something that we have to do to actually push this further. And we're working, we're thinking, and we're reflecting, and the one of the reasons why we're here, what can we do? And obviously you have the second tier countries like Guinea, Uganda, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, Congo, Democratic Mauritania, and Rwanda, second tier, and then Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Guinea-Bissau, Senegal, Liberia, Burkina, Cameroon, third tier countries. And then the other countries, Mozambique, Togo, they are very small producers and consume rice. So they're there. But it's important that what this is showing is that there is an issue here in terms of meeting rice self-sufficiency. Rice imports in sub-Saharan Africa, and I will just take, we just decided to take three countries that are the biggest importers: Nigeria, Senegal, and Cote d'Ivoire. These figures are very interesting. Look at the increased rice in Nigeria. We saw increased rice imports by 71%, but the import share of total rice imports decreased from 24% in 2008 to 18% in 2018. Now we see similar trends in Senegal: increased rice imports by 83%. Again, the import share decreased. In Cote d'Ivoire, same thing. But this is, despite the fact that these countries, the rice importation are increasing, the import share is also decreasing, which I think is a good sign, and there is hope that we can actually push to improve, to decrease rice importation. We made some projections towards 2025. Based on the annual average growth rate of production over the last decade, which was at 4.6%, milled rice production is projected at 23.19 metric tons in 2025. In the case of consumption, it is projected at 49.25. So there is still this gap in 2025, generally. Right? And in order to realize rice self-sufficiency up to 2025, production must increase by an annual growth rate of 16.5%. So production, we have to make sure that we're dealing with this. Now, in terms of impact, it's all about research. I just want to highlight the job that research is doing. Africa Rice, and obviously our partners, a number of technological and institutional innovations in the rice value chain, I wouldn't go through them, they're there from right across the value chain, from varieties, technologies, mechanization, and even innovations dealing with value addition. We've been working on all of these, trying to generate these products which we inject into the system. And we can, from a study that we did, we've shown that improved rice varieties have lifted 8 million people out of poverty and provided food security to 7.2 million people in sub-Saharan Africa over the period 2000 and 2014. So this is real. This is showing what research is actually doing. It's not just talking about figures. It's actually showing that research is having an impact, and we should invest in research. And the results also show that improved rice varieties have increased rice yield by at least 320 kilograms per hectare, although adoption is low due to poor awareness and availability of these resources. So these are areas, again, where we should be focusing. In going forward, we still have the major objectives of rice production. We're talking about self-sufficiency, and again, we're talking about investments. And we have looked at it, especially investments, we're saying, when we discussed with the minister a year ago, we were looking at all this, and we're saying we need to accelerate, because the countries are already doing a lot. We need to accelerate rice self-sufficiency, actions to reach rice self-sufficiency. And we modeled investment requirements through the CIPRISA, the Continental Investment Plan for Accelerating Rice Self-Sufficiency in Africa, which was discussions we had with African Development Bank, and we're working on this with quite a few countries now. And we did a first pilot test in 10 countries. Just a glimpse of the results that we have, if you look at it, it gives us an idea of the additional investment for the 10 pilot countries that we worked with. And this gives an idea of how much we need to invest. These figures do not exist as such. And we, through research, working with countries, tried to collect enough data to actually bring this out. It's an awareness tool. It's a tool that would help countries develop the national rice development strategy. It would help them make decisions. We have a whole lot of information on this. And this is one of the roles that research is playing. So we can see, we can tell approximately how much investment we have to make in irrigation and in actually if we want to reach rice self-sufficiency. Total investment needed over 8 years, $2,754 million. So it's not dreaming. Figures are there, and we should actually pay attention to some of these figures. We couldn't just talk about figures and talk about that and not talk about the gains, because this is important. What are we gaining from this? We'll have an additional meal rice total of 11.7 million tons. And then the total foreign exchange savings, it's huge. Total exchange foreign savings, this is what we'll be making in Africa. This is a big market. This is telling us that we should push towards this. Big import, the import bill was 6.4 million. And this is how much we could actually save on total foreign exchange if we actually invest in the sector. There are additional policy measures that we have to take, reduction of rice importation, and this needs to be sustained, especially for the countries where rice consumption is high, they're interested in rice production, Nigeria, Senegal, and Cote d'Ivoire, focusing on investments in the following areas. Development, I think that the minister also mentioned some of these areas, development and use of improved technologies such as quality seeds, fertilizer, small-scale mechanization, and value addition. These were all mentioned, and the report, actually, the analysis that we did brought this out quite clearly, that these are the areas that we should focus our investment in. The problem is big, the equation is complex. How do we simplify it? And in answer to the minister's questions, focus on these low-hanging fruits. We have proven that if we invest in these areas, we'll reach rice self-sufficiency in 2025. Obviously, something important to go with it institutionally, we have to have an efficient organization of the rice value chain. I mean, this is developing and introducing best-fitting contract farming, linking producers to industries, markets, banks, insurance, and the use of information technology to facilitate the whole process. So in conclusion, between 2008 to 2018, no country has reached, these are points that we should actually take on board, has achieved rice self-sufficiency. Three countries are very close to the target. I guess we'll be happy, Tanzania, Madagascar, I guess Madagascar is there, and Mali. The gap continues to grow, so we should have our red flags up. Trends in use show that policy measures were not sustained, so a lot of work has been done. We can increase yield, but we need to actually implement the right policies to maintain the yield. Climate effect on production. Climate is going to be a big issue here. It will negatively affect the importation of rice in sub-Saharan Africa. It's good for us to know that. It's going to affect the market as well. And to realize rice self-sufficiency in 2025, domestic production must increase at a rate of 16.5% per annum. We have to keep this in mind and work towards that. Obviously, there is a need to increase investments and a need to put in place strong policy measures. So this is just actually taking you through some of the points, actually tickling your brain, and I hope you will be able to retain some of these figures that research has actually generated, so that when we go into the discussions, we'll be basing it on real evidence-based decision making. Thank you very much.